The Case of the Registered Letter. Link to HINTR. Introduction to Joe Mueller. Joseph Mueller, Secret Service Detective of the Imperial Austrian Police, is one of the great experts in his profession. In personality, he differs greatly from other famous detectives. He has neither the impressive authority of Sherlock Holmes, nor the keen brilliancy of Monsieur Lecoq. Mueller is a small, slight, plain-looking man, of indefinite age, and of much humbleness of mien. A naturally retiring, modest disposition, and two external causes are the reasons for Mueller's humbleness of manner, which is his chief characteristic. One cause is the fact that in early youth a miscarriage of justice gave him several years in prison, an experience which cast a stigma on his name and which made it impossible for him, for many years after, to obtain honest employment. But the world is richer, and safer, by Mueller's early misfortune. For it was this experience which threw him back on his own peculiar talents for a livelihood, and drove him into the police force. Had he been able to enter any other profession, his genius might have been stunted to a mere pastime, instead of being, as now, utilized for the public good. Then, the red tape and bureaucratic etiquette which attaches to every governmental department, puts the Secret Service men of the Imperial Police on a par with the lower ranks of the subordinates. Mueller's official rank is scarcely much higher than that of a policeman, although kings and counselors consult him and the police department realizes to the full what a treasure it has in him. But official red tape, and his early misfortune, prevent the giving of any higher official standing to even such a genius. Born and bred to such conditions, Mueller understands them, and his natural modesty of disposition asks for no outward honors, asks for nothing but an income sufficient for his simple needs, and for aid and opportunity to occupy himself in the way he most enjoys. Joseph Mueller's character is a strange mixture. The kindest-hearted man in the world, he is a human bloodhound when once the lure of the trail has caught him. He scarcely eats or sleeps when the chase is on, he does not seem to know human weakness nor fatigue, in spite of his frail body. Once put on a case, his mind delves and delves until it finds a clue, then something awakes within him, a spirit akin to that which holds the bloodhound nose to trail, and he will accomplish the apparently impossible. He will track down his victim when the entire machinery of a great police department seems helpless to discover anything. The high chiefs and commissioners grant a condescending permission when Mueller asks, "May I do this? Or may I handle this case this way?" Both parties knowing all the while that it is a farce, and that the department waits helpless until this humble little man saves its honor by solving some problem before which its intricate machinery has stood dazed and puzzled. This call of the trail is something that is stronger than anything else in Mueller's mentality, and now and then it brings him into conflict with the department. Or with his own better nature. Sometimes his unerring instinct discovers secrets in high places, secrets which the police department is bidden to hush up and leave untouched. Mueller is then taken off the case, and left idle for a while if he persists in his opinion as to the true facts. And at other times, Mueller's own warm heart gets him into trouble. He will track down his victim, driven by the power in his soul which is stronger than all volition, but when he has this victim in the net, he will sometimes discover him to be a much finer, better man than the other individual, whose wrong at this particular criminal's hand set in motion the machinery of justice. Several times that has happened to Mueller, and each time his heart got the better of his professional instincts, of his practical common sense, too, perhaps. At least as far as his own advancement was concerned, and he warned the victim, defeating his own work. This peculiarity of Mueller's character caused his undoing at last, his official undoing that is, and compelled his retirement from the force. But his advice is often sought unofficially by the department, and to those who know, Mueller's hand can be seen in the unraveling of many a famous case. The following stories are but a few of the many interesting cases that have come within the experience of this great detective. But they give a fair portrayal of Mueller's peculiar method of working, his looking on himself as merely an humble member of the department, and the comedy of his acting under official orders when the department is in reality following out his directions. The Case of the Registered Letter. "Oh, sir, save him if you can, save my poor nephew. I know he is innocent." The little old lady sank back in her chair, gazing up at Commissioner von Riedau with tear-dimmed eyes full of helpless appeal. The commissioner looked thoughtful. "But the case is in the hands of the local authorities, madam," he answered gently, a strain of pity in his voice. "I don't exactly see how we could interfere." "But they believe Albert guilty. They haven't given him a chance. He cannot be sentenced without sufficient proof of his guilt." "But the trial, the horrible trial, it will kill him, his heart is weak. I thought you might send someone, someone of your detectives, to find out the truth of the case. You must have the best people here in Vienna." "Oh, my poor Albert. Her voice died away in a suppressed sob, and she covered her face to keep back the tears. The commissioner pressed a bell on his desk. "Is Detective Joseph Mueller anywhere about the building?" he asked of the attendant who appeared at the door. "I think he is, sir. I saw him come in not long ago. Ask him to come up to this room. Say I would like to speak to him." The attendant went out. "I have sent for one of the best men on our force, madam," continued the commissioner, turning back to the pathetic little figure in the chair. "We will go into this matter a little more in detail and see if it is possible for us to interfere with the work of the local authorities in G." The little old lady gave her eyes a last hasty dab with a dainty handkerchief and raised her head again, fighting for self-control. She was a quaint little figure, with soft gray hair drawn back smoothly from a gentle-featured face in which each wrinkle seemed the seal of some loving thought for others. Her bonnet and gown were of excellent material and delicate soft colors, but cut in the style of an earlier decade. The capable lines of her thin little hands showed through the fabric of her gray gloves. Her whole attitude bore the impress of one who had adventured far beyond the customary routine of her home circle, adventured out into the world in fear and trembling, impelled by the stress of a great love. A knock was heard at the door, and a small, slight man, with a kind, smooth-shaven face, entered at the commissioner's call. "You sent for me, sir?" he asked. "Yes, Mueller, there is a matter here in which I need your advice, your assistance, perhaps. This is Detective Mueller, miss," the commissioner picked up the card on his desk, "Miss Grauman. If you will tell us now, more in detail, all that you can tell us about this case, we may be able to help you." "Oh, if you would," murmured Miss Grauman, with something more of hope in her voice. The expression of sympathetic interest on the face of the newcomer had already won her confidence for him. Her slight figure straightened up in the chair, and the two men sat down opposite her, prepared to listen to her story. "I will tell you all I know and understand about this matter, gentlemen," she began. "My name is Babette Grauman, and I live with my nephew, Albert Grauman, engineering expert, in the village of Grunau, which is not far from the city of G. My nephew Albert, the dearest, truest," sobs threatened to overcome her again, but she mastered them bravely. "Albert is now in prison, accused of the murder of his friend, John Siders, in the latter's lodgings in G." "Yes, that is the gist of what you have already told me," said the commissioner. "Mueller Mississippi Grauman believes her nephew innocent, contrary to the opinion of the local authorities in G. She has come to ask for someone from here who could ferret out the truth of this matter. You are free now, and if we find that it can be done without offending the local authorities." "Who is the commissioner in charge of the case in G?" asked Mueller. "Commissioner Lang is his name, I believe," replied Miss Grauman. "H.M." Mueller and the commissioner exchanged glances. "I think we can venture to hear more of this," said the commissioner, as if in answer to their unspoken thought. "Can you give us the details now, madam? Who is, or rather who was, this John Siders?" "John Siders came to our village a little over a year ago," continued Miss Grauman. "He came from Chicago, he told us, although he was evidently a German by birth. He bought a nice little piece of property, not far from our home, and settled down there. He was a quiet man and made few friends, but he seemed to take to Albert and came to see us frequently. Albert had spent some years in America, in Chicago, and Siders liked to talk to him about things and people there. But one day Siders suddenly sold his property and moved to G. 2 weeks later he was found dead in his lodgings in the city, murdered, and now they have accused Albert of the crime."
"On what grounds?"
"Oh, I beg your pardon, sir, I did not mean—"
"That's all right, Mueller," said the commissioner. "As you may have to undertake the case, you might as well begin to do the questioning now."
"They say—" Miss Grauman's voice quavered, "they say that Albert was the last person known to have been in Siders' room. They say that it was his revolver, found in the room.
That is the dreadful part of it, it was his revolver. He acknowledges it, but he did not know, until the police showed it to him, that the weapon was not in its usual place in his study. They tell me that everything speaks for his guilt, but I cannot believe it, I cannot. He says he is innocent in spite of everything. I believe him. I brought him up, sir, I was like his own mother to him. He never knew any other mother. He never lied to me, not once, when he was a little boy, and I don't believe he'd lie to me now that he's a man of 45. He says he did not kill John Siders.
Oh, I know, even without his saying it, that he would not do such a thing."
"Can you tell us anything more about the murder itself?" questioned Mueller gently. "Is there any possibility of suicide? Or was there a robbery?"
"They say it was no suicide, sir,
and that there was a large sum of money missing. But why should Albert take anyone else's money? He has money of his own, and he earns a good income besides. We have all that we need. Oh, it is some dreadful mistake. There is the newspaper account of the discovery of the body. Perhaps Mr. Mueller might like to read that. She pointed to a sheet of newspaper on the desk. The commissioner handed it to Mueller. It was an evening paper, dated G, September 24, and it gave an elaborate account, in provincial journalese, of the discovery that morning of the body of John Siders, evidently murdered, in his lodgings. The main facts to be gathered from the long-winded story were as follows. John Siders had rented the rooms in which he met his death about 10 days before, paying a month's rent in advance.